Okay, another Rosetti?
Asking some few clarifying questions that you noted me. I was supposed to be following immediately after Davis.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to be right.
If I'm not
before there is that response, in fact there were three hands.
Yeah.
Honorable Davis raised 30 questions.
Yeah.
And then it was the end of the day.
And then Honorable Kekana came in with 20 minutes or so.
Okay, yeah. Let's start with you, Honorable Sadi, before we take the entities for your response.
A few general comments, before I ask some clarity questions, seeking questions with regard to the entities as presented. But let me start by appreciating overall improvement with regard to audit outcomes at the level of the ministry, GCIS, and the entities. But I must echo the same sentiment, Chair, that I'm also equally disappointed about MDDA with regard to late submission of the report. But secondly, there is an issue which was raised with regard to some targets which are not smart, which may be very difficult for the Auditor General to come up with an audit opinion. It's an issue that we might want to improve very seriously so going forward. There is also an issue regarding the ICASA underspending on conditional grant. The 93 million or more is an issue that we might also want to be clarified on, Chair, when we come to responses. When Brand South Africa was presenting, she raised an issue around the perception on the language issue, and I thought they'll also be able to provide some suggestions as to how best can we deal with some of these things, especially it was in relation to fraudulent expenditure and the like. As much as I might want to agree with them and also take their suggestion in that regard, but my take is that once a problem becomes a challenge, you don't necessarily come up with the necessary vigor and determination to deal with that particular issue. But I would appreciate if they have suggestions to make in that regard. There is also an issue around the increase of, I think Honorable Kekana raised it a little bit, an increase of 15.7, from 15.7 million to 26 by ICASA as well on consulting and professional fees. It's an area of concern that we definitely need us to improve on going forward. The same applies to the vacancy rate of 21%, as highlighted. From SABC, there was an issue which says 75% of targets were not specific. And it's an issue that we've always been raising, Chair, that especially from the Auditor General and all these other entities who are supposed to receive these annual performance plans and approve them in advance. We've always been saying, why would you want to approve targets which are not specific and allow entities to run with them? And at the end of the, and when you start with the auditing processes, you start to say you could not come up with an opinion because some of these targets were not specific. To me, it doesn't make sense. These are some of the issues that you need to pick up at the stage where you are supposed to be approving them as such. There was also an issue of no evidence on amount disclosed. Let me leave this one. SABC as well, there is also an issue on the Nedbank loan repayment obtained in 2010. I thought the committee might want to be provided with information as to how much are we talking about and how far are we in terms of repaying that loan from Nedbank. I think those are the issues that I had wanted to raise, Chair, before we come to responses. But the second last one is with regard to the DG having not signed performance agreements. But still we have bonuses which were awarded to people. To me, it doesn't make sense. I think we might also want to be given information as to what happened in that regard. Why would we have a situation where no assessment were made at the level of the DG and the minister, but still bonuses were awarded to people reporting to the DG and the like. The last one is the one that was already as well, that why would you take over 8 months to fill vacancies? It's an issue that is highly not acceptable to find entities taking over 8 months or so just to fill up a post, because these are some of the challenges which are making it difficult for us to be able to execute the mandate that we expect from all the people are supposed to be doing these things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Teddy. Yeah, let's proceed to the entities in the same order in which they were presenting.
Thank you, Chair. The 93 million, yes, indeed, it's a conditional grant. It was received for specific items, capital expenditure, postal monitoring equipment, broadcast monitoring equipment, spectrum management software. A lot of these items had gone through the procurement process. By the end of the financial year, we had entered into contracts already for the postal monitoring equipment at the end of March 2014. So if one looks at our financial statements, there is a note disclosure that talks to commitments related to contract expenditure. So one would find that although a commitment is used, the actual cash outflow hasn't taken place. So delays in procurement processes due to the fact that we had to source the equipment overseas, but still following our procurement regulation and giving our local service providers an opportunity to bid first. So when those avenues failed, we eventually had to source the equipment overseas. But as I indicated, we did manage to finalize the contract at the end of March 2014. We had commitments in place which allowed us to actually retain the funds at the end of March 2014.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there was a question raised around the increase in the spend on consultants. I think the primary reason for that really is the legal review process that was initiated by our licensees on the call termination regulations. So that has resulted in a spike in our legal fees when we defended the case.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honourable members. There was a question that was raised by the honourable members pertaining to the issue of a high vacancy rate. When we closed off the financial year, our vacancy rate was sitting at 21%, which is exactly what has been reported on. But I think the honourable members will be pleased to know that since the beginning of the new financial year, we have filled to date 25 positions, which led to the reduction of the vacancy rate. As at 30th of September, our vacancy rate is sitting at 14%, which is a drastic reduction from where we were sitting. Also with the appointment of one of our most critical positions, which is the one of the COO, which is he's sitting here. So based on the issues of vacancy rate, the action plans that we're having seems to be working now that we've reduced it from 21% to 14%. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll on the two comments of regarding Brand South Africa. We will be discussing with the ministry and the minister in particular, and we will engage with Treasury on and the AG in terms of what could be acceptable, if different language that could be used, which still carries the same message. And the importance of the matters, but just addressing the issues around the impact they have on the perceptions and the psyche. And we will keep the portfolio committee posted on that once we come up with suggested terminology or language. And then the other one is, I think, also just a general one on HR. Which I assume cuts across many of the entities. I think Public Service Commissioner mentioned it also in his presentation regarding to Brand SA. We had an exercise of doing an OD, and which was last year. And at that point, when we commissioned an OD, we decided not to fill in the vacant positions. The final outcome of the OD was finalized and approved by the board in July of this year and is being implemented. And however, the implementation of it is over a three-year phase-in process. If we were to implement it in one fell swoop, it would have budgetary implications. And if we phase it in, then it's catered for in the inflationary increase of the budget. We are also looking, of course, at discussing with ministry in terms of looking at how we can increase the baseline budget to be able to address some of the programs that are dealing with the expanded mandate of focusing on the internal audience, the citizenry, as well as the international audience. So what you will see going forward is the vacancies that will be showing would be vacancies that are still going to be phased in the following year and the year after. Currently, all of the positions have been advertised and should be filled in by?
Well, end of November.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Minister.
Yet by Brand SA, then that.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. I'm going to deal with some of the questions, and my colleagues will deal with the rest. The question was raised about the key positions not being filled. I think the Honourable Minister this morning in her opening address made reference to the SABC's GCO and CFO position, so I'm not going to deal with that. As far as the Group Executive of News, Stakeholder Relations and Provinces and Sport is concerned, that recruitment process, those positions have been advertised and the recruitment process is underway. Clearly, the filling of those positions will depend on the outcome of the recruitment process itself. But we are hopeful to fill those before the end of November. There was a question around the skills shortage and HR practices specifically. I want to assure this House that the SABC is HR practices and policies and related matters are receiving high priority in the SABC. So a number of our HR policies and procedures are under review. Obviously, these policies also require consultation with organized labor. But as far as the programs are concerned, I would just like to highlight a few of them: talent management and retention, which clearly speak about the development of talent and the retention. And that when we talk about talent in the SBC, we certainly refer to our permanent employees, but also our on-air talent, which we've already referred to sometimes, or in most instances, retained on a freelance basis. Performance management, we've already referred to that in our presentation earlier on. Learning and development, and then also an integrated workforce plan. And that all stems from the skills audit that was done some time ago. I'm not going to go into all the details, I just want to give some idea of what we are doing currently. I think those are the issues that I want to deal with, and I'll hand over to my other colleagues.
Good afternoon, Chair. I will respond to the regular expenditure matter. It's true that in the financials we have disclosed 3.3 billion of the regular expenditure. But as explained, 990 million of that was incurred in the current year. 1.36 billion was incurred in 2013 and 1 billion in 2012. So in the previous years, I think about 100 million was disclosed. But as part of the qualification in 2013, the AG cautioned the SABC by saying that our disclosures of irregular expenditure were incomplete. That means they had evidence that it had occurred, but we had disclosed less than we should have. So this year we set up as part of the audit action plan, a team that went and rummaged through previous contracts and tenders and so on to try and identify this irregular expenditure. And members will realize that irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure by its very nature is not something that is going to be disclosed openly. Yeah, because the PFMA has prescriptions people who incur this expenditure may not be very comfortable if those prescriptions are given, especially around Section 81 and 83 of the PFMA, which says, I mean, there would have to be some discipline and other remedies. So by its very nature, an auditor or even a manager who is the first line of defense for internal controls, in the internal controls regime in entities, will have to discover this. So the SABC historically did not have the mechanism to discover this. The policy framework was weak to pick some of these issues. So we have gone back and investigated some of this. That's why you'll see a surge in the numbers that have been disclosed. The question is, how did it happen? I explained that there are two issues. The first one is from the business. the way the business operates. And an example would be like sport. We have budgets, let's say, for example, 400 million for sports of national interest. But we find that we need maybe 800 million to, in total, to show some of those games, to broadcast them. But we find that at the closer to the date when these things need to be broadcasted, we need to look into our budget and, you know, squeeze out some of these funds. So what happens is usually, because of the negotiations take too long, you would find that by the time the games are broadcasted, the contracts have not been fully signed, because there's a need to broadcast it, but there's also the contracting. So that is one large aspect of, I mean, root causes of these problems. The second one is about policies. For many years, the SFDC used to accept photocopies of tax certificates, tax clearance certificates. And the officials were sure that that's fine, because it is a copy of a tax certificate. But however, the law is very clear, the Treasury regulations. So you must get a tax certificate, but the tax certificate is given with a proviso that any copy is null and void. So the officials believed that they were actually complying with the policy, but the policy was defective because it wasn't reviewed for compliance with the law. So over the years, this amount built up, and that is probably the root cause. So who is responsible is a very tough question. If you strictly talk about responsibility around policies, then you'd have to fall back to the PFMA, and of course the accounting authority would be responsible. So the accounting authority is responsible for governing the entity. But since it's historical, it would then be the accounting authorities at that time. But that is a general remark. We would have to go to each individual case and try and analyze that. The other issue that I'd want to deal with is about what is being done to deal with the skills in the CFO's office. Yeah, the SFDC, we've discovered that actually these professional accountants, the professional accounting skills are in short supply. And what we're doing is we're reorganizing the department of the finance department to test whether it's able to give, to present accurate information for business decision making, and also for compliance with the law. But one issue that we are picking up is it talks to structure also. Structure will need to be changed, and we will fill this position. But I can give an undertaking that this will happen in the next 3 months, where we will get those skills. But the issue is the skills on their own will not probably deal with everything, because some of the defects in the control environment are entrenched. So policies and procedures will need to be rewritten, and you know, a couple of other supporting functions realigned to make sure that the impact of these new skills that we bring in are properly dealt with. But we are very sure that of our plan, and we know how we're going to put it together. We are confident that in the next 2 years we will have a better auditor opinion. Thank you. Sorry, I just need to also comment maybe on the net bank loan. If you look at the 2013 financial statements, we had disclosed 166 million of relating to the net bank loan that was guaranteed by government. In 2014, that amount is nil. We settled that sometime last year, I think in September. So we don't have any liability to NetBank. The only liabilities we have to NetBank are not relating to the government guarantee. They relate to a finance lease that is for the acquisition of high-definition TV OB vans. And I think we have two of them. We had two of them at year-end. We've settled one, so there's one of about 54 million that is outstanding. And the interest rates on those are very low, that we do not think settling them immediately is worth it when we have needs, cash flow needs. We would better use that money and rather trade on low interest finance. Thank you.
Thanks. I think we have covered most of them. The ones which I think are still remaining, the issue of monies paid to departing officials. I think the context in which these people were paid, it needs to be understood very well, because most of these cases, like for example, when the board which is currently there came in, they find some of these cases have been dragging over years. So you have an issue whether you have to drag the case further, not filling the position. That's the reason why some of these high positions were not filled. That's the background of it. So we have to make a business decision as to settling some of these cases. So that's the background of it. There are some, like the last one, the GCEO, is a current one, but I mean, I think the board had very good grounds of making those decisions. And it's a pity that SABC is a public broadcaster. We have to justify these things to the public. But those are business decisions which were well thought of and well debated by the board. So, and I think those were the right decisions at that point. And then in case of them, and it should be noted in case of these payments that some of them are leave days, and so it's not necessarily the whole figure, say golden handshake. So there's a lot of a breakdown of it. We don't give the breakdown in the annual report. So people, you must not read it as a golden handshake. There, people are entitled to leave days and other things which should be paid when they leave the organization. And then in case of vehicles and other things not paid for, I think this is something which didn't happen in the past year. I don't know where it's coming from. It's not in the audit report. It's not something which should be something which has been settled a long time ago. I think we need clarity as to where is it coming from. In the last one is in case of the smart targets, I think the process has greatly improved currently. When the corporate plan is prepared, it is bound with the AG first to find out, to check if those targets can be measured or whether they are specific. I think you'll see a greater improvement in the coming financial year's report. What we have done in the audit committee is that we have mandated the internal audit to audit those targets on a quarterly basis, and to ensure that they are measurable by ensuring that there's evidence supporting those achievements or results which comes from them. And as part of the audit plan which we have put in place, we have agreed that we are going to have a workshop with the AG and management and the board, where we are going to look at those targets and their measurability, and if you measure them, what do you use to measure them? So that process is going to be done in the next month. We are going to do that in the next audit committee, which is in November. So we are very much conscious of those problems. It's a problem to the organization also, because if you can't measure yourself properly, you can't also measure your executives and management, because their performance is linked to those targets. So we're working on that. We'll get a quick solution for that. I think we've covered all the questions. I don't know if... the issue of the disciplinary processes for the board, we'll request the honorable member to give us the page number in the previous year's annual report. But I think it's very important for, I think the honorable members understand the processes of appointing board members. Us as board members are appointed by the president, not even by the minister. So the disciplinary process of a board member will follow the way he's appointed. So, obviously, if there are issues with us, I mean, they will be dealt through the shareholder, which is the Minister of Communication, and then obviously if there's any sanction which have to be taken to against any board member, it will come from the person who have appointed that specific board member through the recommendation of obviously the shareholder. So I think us as board members, we cannot discipline each other.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the question raised by Honorable Telly on the issue of the DG having not signed the performance agreement that relates to the DG of the then DOC, meaning the current DTPS DG. So that's the matter that relates to that one. The issues raised by the Public Service Commission. I'm aware of that issue because I once served in the Portfolio Committee then. I'm aware of the issue of the DG of Telecoms and Postal Services. With regard to over 8 months to fill the vacancies, I think now we'll relate it to the question raised by Honorable Davis with regard to our own GCIS. I think members of the portfolio will recall the first day I appeared before the portfolio, because when we took over, you know, we had to do with the realignment. And I indicated why we were not filling the position, because we were going to create excess staff. So since then, we didn't make any appointment. Now that we've established the CIS, we're going to fill the position of the Director General for the department. But it's historical, of course, that was unacceptable to have such vacancies not being filled within a reasonable period of time. And the President, I remember in one of the State of the Nation address, had instructed that a vacant position should be filled then in the fourth administration. And then with regard to the issues raised by Honorable Davis on the board disciplinary matters, that in the previous financial year, there was a matter reported of a board member who misbehaved. Indeed, like what the board member has indicated, that responsibilities for the appointing authority, including Parliament itself, to that effect. So you do not want to report a matter if under the year under review, because there was no issue reported on the ill discipline of a member. The current one that we are dealing with now, it will be reported on the current financial year. But for the year under review, there was nothing to report, and there's nothing that the SABC has done that didn't want to report. And then with regard to money paid to the former CEO and the head of news, I think the officials have dealt with it. Also, even the chair of the audit committee addressed that matter. And then with regard to the positions, the head of sports, the head of whatever that you have raised, I think you've seen the advert. And I think the SABC board is busy dealing with that. I think that should be, Anthony, you can update the members of the House, how far are you with that, because that is the board's appointment. And then with regard to, I won't comment on the issue of the chairperson qualification, because this is the process that we are dealing with as Parliament. But it was also linked to the question that says that the Minister agreed that we need to relook on the appointment of board members. I agree with you, hence you recall on our retreat I indicated, because also the issue of the appointment process, I think I'll be submitting legislation, as you recall, part of my responsibility is to prepare and initiate legislation for Parliament to enact such law. I will be coming as per my presentation on the strategic plan that will be doing that. So these are the issues that we feel we need to address. On this issue, to say how can we hold other entities to comply, and then I won't comment on the issues of Mr. Wuchening and the public protector, because like Chair, you've ruled on that one. But I wanted to bring this to the attention of the honorable member. This is a legislative requirement
that entities must account for their action. And then in the case of boards, you know, you've got boards that are executive authorities that are accountable to Parliament. And unfortunately, this is the PFMA requirement, then if they are supposed to report, they have to report, and Parliament must do that oversight. That's the emphasis that I want to make. With regard to the process of appointment of the group CEO, why is it taking so long? You know, this case, there were external people that applied for the job. And then there are processes that also are determined by external factors, like you are vetting, the clearance of people. So that's what is causing the delay. But I think I wish to also indicate that, as Mr. Rubisi has indicated, the board has already taken a decision on the matter, and then they've made these recommendations to me. But I'm still awaiting for the outcome of these other entities, like your vetting agencies that are vetting the applicants, so that I need to satisfy myself to that effect. And then I think I also need to link it with the issue raised by Honorable Kekan, my learned colleague. You know the doctrine of separation of powers. You know it very well. You've got these three arms, the, you know, section 43 to 44 gives your service parliament the powers what needs to do, you need to do, and then ourselves as the executive authority, you know, section 85 to spells out what we are supposed to do, and also the other one is the judiciary. I think to this effect, allow that process to take. You need not to pronounce yourself on that, so that you allow this process of the doctrine of separation of powers to apply. And then I think on the other issues that you have raised, Honorable Kekan, it was about to say, yes, if you've seen our presentation, it can be business as usual. And we've made a commitment yourself to yourself with clear timelines. I think we've had discussions with all the chairs and the CEOs of the entities to say it can be business as usual. And then when those reports are submitted to us, some of them are starting in November, like you have rightfully said, where there's a need of remedial action, then it will be. So if it means dismissal without starting with a written warning, as you put it, Honorable Member, it will be done. So it can't be business as usual, because myself, especially in particular, we are responsible to make sure that the department functions as is expected to them. Same thing with the entities that we do oversight on them. So we'll give you regular updates, because once we put this deadline of November, these are the reports that we'll be submitting to yourself, so that you are able to also do a dashboard and monitor the progress made to that effect. We have indicated that, you see, now, except there's no entity that got a, except with the MDD, I can't even talk about it because it didn't comply. None of the entities do have a clean audit. And remember, 2014 was declared a year of clean audit. I think all of us, together with the entities, we need to go back to the drawing board to ensure that there's compliance. To comply is a non-negotiable. You just need to comply, because that's what the law says. Same to say that also what the chairperson of the SABC board says, of the Brand SA board said, to say also it's about also the messaging. Because I always say, for any irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there must be consequences. If you check on the annual report in those entities that report there, if you have sat with them, I was asking them to update me on the progress made on the disciplinary measures that have been taken for those that were responsible for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So that's the report that I said I need to get all of them by end of November, because there should be consequences for wrongdoing. So that's all I can say, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister and all the entities for the responses. Like I indicated, definitely we can't finalize a discussion. I agree with you on what you raised. We will take on board all these matters and integrate them with, within our oversight program. Members will notice even the coming quarter it has to pull these matters to deal with them. But before I actually conclude on this, before I even thank the work that has been done, can I just find out maybe from the AG, from the Public Service Commission, from the Minister herself, if there are any closing comments that you'd need to deal with. For us with members, we will still interact, you know, we'll take all the time, 5 years, to deal with this, because we'll still have other audits and we'll assess if we're making progress. AG's office? That's Van Rensburg, no?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to make one comment, Honourable Chair, that the Honourable Member made in terms of the approval of targets. That we do pre-audit the plans. Last year we did a presentation to the then Portfolio Committee on the outcomes, similarly that in a similar format to doing the audit report. So we do audit the future plans and we do report on them before they get approved. So we will just have to liaise with you in terms of fitting that into the program again when it comes to March, April, when those documents get tabled.
Thanks, Stefan Ransbeck. Public Service Commission, okay. All right.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister. I thought I would just talk on the issue raised by the Honourable Member pertaining to the performance rewards and just clarify that the previous DOC did not undertake any performance assessments of SMS members. It was in the GCIS where performance assessments took place and where performance rewards were awarded. And I think one needs to perhaps look at those numbers which you were raising, because 28.6% of the SMS achieved performance rewards, which amounted to about half a million rand. Now, I think the things that you would need to weigh in assessing whether this is fair and reasonable is to understand that there are two sides to consequence management. The one side is taking action against people where there's maladministration, fraud, wrongdoing of any sort, but there is also acknowledgement and recognition and reward for good performance. Now, if you look at the high-level issues, the GCIS met 93% of its targets, which is high. So that in itself could explain why so many of the SMS got performance rewards. But you may also want to look at the system as it's regulated in the public service, where 1.5% of the compensation budget is seen as the norm within which performance rewards are granted. But if we look at the SMS wage bill, it means that when we awarded 28.6, which is about 29% of the SMS, it amounts to 14 people out of 49 of the SMS, and it's 15% of the SMS wage bill. So it is high, in my view, but it's not irregular. There's nothing wrong with it on the face of it. But then one needs to look at the overall performance. 93% of the targets were met. And one would probably want to look at how the performance rewards were distributed through the organization. Because I think it's also important, in my view, having worked in the public service environment for a long time, to recognize that the achievement of managers is also dependent on the achievement of the work of the workforce as a whole. And if such a high proportion is going to the SMS, it would mean that there's a relatively low proportion going to the levels below the SMS, levels 1 to 12. So I think these are the calls that heads, HODs, DGs need to make in advising their EA, who will obviously, with the original powers, sign off on performance awards. So I'm just trying to give you more information that you can contextualize it. There's nothing irregular, but there is a high proportion going to the SMS with a high value, 15% of the SMS salary bill,
whereas normally we're looking at the entire compensation bill, 1.5%. Obviously, the SMS is a minority, but if you're going to look at the proportion of compensation going to the SMS, it is high. So those are the kind of factors one would need to balance, but there's nothing irregular. Thank you, Chairperson.
Hey, thanks, Prof. Lavin, the last input. Minister?
Thank you, Chair. I think there was the other issue of the ICASA councillors. I think I need to clarify this before I even close. You recall the Act refers to the minister as an accounting, as an appointing authority. Then when we realized that the councillors' terms were coming to an end, we deemed it prudent and informed the...
I did suppress that one, Minister.
Okay.
I would request that we just leave it at that level. Proceed, Minister. Okay,
so
let me allow you to proceed. But I'm definitely going to look
no,
at the
time. The time. So that's why when we took it upon ourselves to inform the speaker about these contracts that are coming to an end. And automatically by law, the contracts will terminate, like the other one is end of September that they've terminated, and the other one is end of October. So the 45-day period is a handover period. Hence, we have since instructed, informed the affected councillors that we had to remind them that their terms have come to an end and that they need to use the 45-day period to hand over the whatever the project they were working on. So, but their contracts have come to an end. It's an issue that cannot be debated because even themselves, they know that. But nevertheless, Chair, I also want to indicate that you note Section 38 of the PFMA. It is very clear that the efficient running of administration is the accountability of the accounting officers, and they are then accountable to yourselves as Parliament. Then myself now as the responsible for the department, I think it's our commitment, and we know working with you, we're gonna go places in the sense that together, if we work together, then we can take these entities and the department forward. I wish to also thank you for your continued support because the input that I get from the committee, I take them all in good faith to say in the best interest of the country to say let's improve where we feel there's something lacking, and we can assure you our commitment that will always be available as and when Parliament wants us to account. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Minister Faith Mutambi, Minister for Communications. That's a new communications. I'm sure at some point there will be a need, Prof. Lavin, to just sit and clear the issue of, around the issue of the proclamation and the directions that have been taken. Because we're going to have a continuous working relationship with the Auditor General, with the Public Service Commission. It's not the last, but it's just the beginning because there's so much work that we definitely must partner in terms of ensuring that it enhances our oversight work. Okay, what is going to happen now? We're going to take a tea break, but we can release all entities and the minister, and then we'll come back for the brief presentation on the, let me call it in full, budgetary reviewal and recommendation report, BRRR process, which we have to start as members. It's just a touch of 8 members, but we'll deal with the latter part of it the next week. Thank you very much to everyone.